go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
Whoa. Slow your roll, Scott.
What's going on?
I think you're going at an ill-advised pace for this podcast. Do it more like this. Hi, I'm Ben Boland.
You know what, Ben? I don't think I've ever been accused of acting too quickly before. Maybe driving too quickly, but not acting too quickly.
Ah, yes. Okay, that's a much better segue here, because what we're going to talk about today is speed. Or the lack thereof, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing we should talk about, there's an article that came out fairly recently before we recorded. I have both this article and the news about this article. I have an update that we'll close on, okay?
Fair enough. What's the article?
So the article is this idea that came around on the Daily Mail and on the Telegraph that the European Union had been considering a proposal to limit the majority of vehicles to 70 miles per hour.
Okay. Haven't we heard this before?
Yeah, this is something that crops up not just in the EU, but around the world, right?
Yeah, I think it happens everywhere. And can I just, before we get really deep into this, this goes back to a question that people have asked for a long, long time, is if the speed limit's 55, if the speed limit's 65, 70, whatever it is, why do manufacturers make cars that will travel at 150 miles an hour?
You know what? That's a good question. And then another question that I would add to that that people also ask is, how fast can my car really go?
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Yeah. Now, the reason that we're bringing up both of those questions is because, well, we intend to answer them in this podcast.
Yeah, more or less. I don't know about the first one, but we'll get to the second one.
Okay. So, yeah, the first one, let's tackle that. The first one, the idea of speed limits. Should they exist, right? Some people would say no.
Mm-hmm.
Do they matter? And that's very interesting, because we've seen speed limits change before. We know that, of course, speed limits here in the United States change depending upon the state you're in, the density of the area you're in. Whether or not we're in a fuel crisis. Good call, Scott.
Yeah,
that's a deep cut. And even the time of day, if we're talking about like a school zone.
True.
But when those changes occur, one of the big questions here is, does lowering the speed limit or even raising the speed limit have a measurable effect on the safety of the roads?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, they seem to have a grasp on what this may or may not do for their safety record, I suppose, right? Because, I think, man, they said something like 30,000 people die on the roads in Europe every year. And
right.
This is according to the European Commission's, Mobility and Transport Department. And, this is all from the article.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about, you know, whether we agree with this or not later on. Now, there's no disputing that fact. I mean, that, you know, 30,000 people die each year on the roads in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as, like, the UK itself, because this is where the article is coming out, is saying that, you know, that in the UK, this is where they're talking about this big change, right?
Right.
Specifically in the UK. And apparently the UK has actually a better safety record than some of the other European countries. Like, the numbers quoted here are 1,754 people died on the road in accidents last year in the UK as compared to 3,657 in Germany.
And let's not even count Italy.
Yeah, Italy's in there as well. So it seems like, you know, they do have a better record. Why are they so gung-ho about suddenly reducing the speed limit, or actually, you know what? I don't know if it's reducing the speed limits, it's reducing how fast your car will go. I mean, you could press the accelerator all day long.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying we don't want that car to exceed 70 miles per hour.
Right. And the next question would be, how would they do this? Well, in this idea, and we do need to keep in mind that this is an opinion. This is a what if thing. This law has not even been written.
Yeah. And just so that we're clear on this, that's a lot of people that have died on the roads. I totally understand.
Absolutely.
That. And I tragic every one.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is when they're looking at a number that's half of what Germany has, you know, less than half, I don't understand why they're, you know, prompted to jump into action on this right away.
Right. The question is not whether or not it's worth preventing fatalities. The question is this a viable way to do so?
Yeah.
I think that's an important differentiation. So Scott, how would this work? How would they somehow keep people from exceeding? Would they have a limiter in every car?
Well, that's kind of the idea, isn't it? I mean, according to the article, they're talking about a couple of different ways to do this. Now, mm-hmm. this is really strange. The limiters, of course, this will work on fuel-injected engines, you know, that have computer-controlled, so anything with an ECU would be able to be controlled like this. They're talking about satellite systems. They're talking about camera systems that read road signs mm-hmm. and then slow the vehicle to, you know, the proper speed so that, you know, the maximum is the maximum on any given road.
So that there's no fudging with the number.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're on a road that, you know, the speed limit is 35, you're only going to be able to go 35 at the max if your foot is mashed to the ground. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. This is a far-reaching idea. You know, this is something that's really it's ticking a lot of people off because, you know, it's a violation of freedom, of course. And I think, who was it, the transport secretary,
mm-hmm.
Peter McLaughlin, I think is his name.
Yeah.
And he says that his quote is that this has Big Brother written all over it. He's saying that, you know, this is what gets people's, you know, I don't know,
makes their hackles rise.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I was trying to think of like, you know, how to say that. It gets them very excited, very tense
yeah.
about this to say, you're really stepping on my freedoms here.
Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. Let's go into our ideas here. Let's dig into some meat here. And let's go across the pond to our home country, the United States. Scott, our question about whether or not new legal changes to speed limits do affect drivers. Well, in 1996, the National Motorist Association found that drivers will adjust their velocity, but just a little bit. So they had a study of 22 states where speed limits were either raised or lowered by 5, 10, 15, or 20 miles per hour. And they found that average velocities did change, but get this, by less than 2 miles an hour.
Really? So let's say that the speed limit's posted at 65.
Okay.
People are going to feel comfortable going 75 or even 80.
Right.
If it's 70, they may feel comfortable going 80 or 85, maybe even, I don't know, maybe close to 90. I don't know. It seems like that around here a lot of times.
Right. Well,
so people
yeah.
push it just a little bit, right? They always mm-hmm. seem to edge it up just a little bit, but maybe not, you know, let's say if it's a 35-mile-an-hour zone, they're not going to feel comfortable going 60. Because that's a clear violation. You're going to be able to spot that car out of a pack of others, you know, and say that that's
right.
the one that's speeding. But if you're going just a little bit over, I think people are a little more comfortable with the idea that, well, I'm just edging it just a little bit. You know, school zone, you shouldn't be doing mm-hmm. that, but a lot of people do that kind of thing.
Well, there's that old canard, isn't there, that at least in the U.S., people like to say, I've heard this a million times, people say, well, you know, as long as you're not going 11 over the speed limit, you're okay.
Yeah, I've heard that too, and I don't buy that one bit.
Yeah, I don't buy it either, but I will say in our earlier podcast, Driving Rules That No One Follows, we did talk about how much of a sore thumb somebody looks like when they're on the interstate and they're going the absolute speed limit. They're just at 55.
Yeah, yeah.
They even people in the slow lane get irritated, honk a horn, swerve around. The truth is just that the majority of drivers do push the speed limit. And to our earlier question, I want to get the cat out of the bag, the badger out of the can right now, the camel out of the sack. Are these enough?
That's plenty. Ben.
Okay. Because I have like five more.
Well, that's plenty. Save
okay,
them.
Okay, I'll save them. So these studies did find that there's an interesting answer to the question, do higher speed limits cause more car accidents? Not necessarily. But the accidents that do occur are inherently more severe, inevitably so.
Well, of course, yeah. I mean, you've got a greater velocity. You got a lot of momentum carried with this thing. I've seen a lot of, you know, driving testing going on, you know, with traction control systems, things like that, where they prove that, you know, if you have traction control on versus off, here's the way the car reacts on, you know, on ice, on wet roads, on dry mm-hmm. roads, on gravel, on whatever the surface may be. Obviously, there's more momentum, more speed, more danger of you sliding out, more danger of you overcorrecting, less chance of you, you know, being able to steer out of the situation, greater damage once you do hit something.
Mm-hmm.
Just there's a lot of everything kind of snowballs the faster you go. And of course, you know, slower speeds are going to save lives in some cases, not in all cases. I mean, a lot of these deaths, I mean, they don't really say exactly what happened here, but somebody may have rolled off the road at 25 miles an hour and hit a tree. And, and that could have caused a death. I mean, you have to look at each one of these and figure out how many of these were caused by excessive speed.
And there are some things that might be a little bit, I guess, contrafactual here or contradictory to what the conventional wisdom is. The conventional wisdom would say, well, if people are at lower speeds, then they will not only be less likely to have an accident, they will be less likely to die. Is this always the case? Well, after New York raised the cap on their highway traffic to 65 miles per hour back in 1995, the state's total crash rate dropped by 4%.
Okay, so there's numbers that back this up.
Well, they back it up in one case, and it goes back to what you're saying, case by case. This is wildly counterintuitive
to
me.
See, this is the thing. You can manipulate numbers to work any way that you want. And I know a lot of people are saying, like, look at this set of numbers, it doesn't tell the same story. Look at that set of numbers, mm-hmm. it tells a different story. So, you know, statistics can be manipulated in many different ways to prove many different things.
That's a great point. It reminds me of Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain, a.k.a. one of my favorite writers, and his quote about statistics, which, because we are a family show, I cannot recite here. You know what we should do? Now that we've established this, we should get right into what speed limiters are and how they work. But before we do, I think it's time for a word from our sponsor.
Sounds good. And we're back. So, you know, I know you wanted to kind of jump into speed limiters and, you know, what's going on there. But there's a couple of things I just want to quickly get out about the EU proposal, if that's all right.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Okay. First, just so everybody knows, it's going to be called the Intelligent Speed Adaptation. And it's ISA. That's the acronym for this thing. So if you see that pop up anywhere, that's what they're talking about, this whole speed limiting idea. Now, here's a couple of reasons that I personally believe that something like this would never happen.
All right. Shoot.
And I mean, there's really a lot of different reasons. These are just a few that off the top of my head, I scribbled down as I was coming in here. Okay. First of all, people don't like to be told that they can't do something.
True. Absolutely.
I mean, if you drive as fast as a lot of people just like to drive as fast as they choose to. Mm-hmm. And that's a freedom that people enjoy. People also find a way to work around anything, you know, bypassing any kind of system that's put in, like a limiting system. Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed that somebody's going to figure out a way to cheat this thing almost immediately.
Sure.
So, you know, you can have all of the mechanisms in place to stop this. Someone's going to find a way to bypass it. So the car will be officially legal, but, you know, they're working around it. The next one is that, well, we talked about this a little bit, but the speed limit isn't the same in all places. So, I mean, if they do this thing where they limit cars just to 70, let's say that they're not doing the camera system, the intelligence system where it's, if it's 25 zone, the car will only go 25 and, you know, 55, so on.
Mm-hmm.
If they limit the car to 70, just 70, what's going to stop people from going 70 in a 35-mile-an-hour zone or in a 55-mile-an-hour zone? There's still going to be speeders here and there.
Oh, unless they have some sort of system that throttles it down when you hit that zone, which is pretty dangerous.
Well, that's the camera system, right, that reads road signs.
I guess as long as it's a – I mean, that's a good point because as – first off, if it's just a one-size-fits-all solution, you're absolutely right. That is a huge oversight there. But if it is a if it's a system wherein the car's speed is automatically adjusted,
mm-hmm.
so you're going, say you're going on a 45-mile-per-hour place, you hit a school zone, it's 35 miles per hour, and this camera somehow knows it or whatever, and then how does it reduce your speed safely to that point?
Oh, if you don't know what's going on behind you, but supposedly all vehicles are going to be fitted with this, so the cars behind you will also slow down at the same time.
Theoretically.
Theoretically. It seems like there's going to be some kind of jam up in the, you know, behind you.
These are good reasons.
Now, I got a couple more and that's it really. The manufacturers, I think they would completely resist this, especially for performance models. I think car sales of performance models would drop considerably. I mean, what good is it to have a brand new Corvette if it'll only go 70 maximum? I know there's something mental about that, a mental hurdle mm-hmm. that I don't think people would be able to overcome. Also, would they retrofit older cars with this newer technology? And if they do that, who would pay for that? I mean, I guess you would have to be responsible for your own vehicle to make sure that it's compliant to be on the road.
Sure.
But man, that seems like an awful lot to ask of somebody that has, you know, two or three, four, maybe four older cars that are sitting in the driveway to have to retrofit this new technology in order just to be able to drive in the road. That could be very, very expensive. So, I mean, who's going to willingly take their old car in to do this? And what about carbureted models? You know, cars that don't have electronic fuel injection. How are they going to be able to limit this? Is that a completely new device that we've never heard of? Something, or will they switch all of them over to be fuel injected cars? A lot of problems with this.
Can I dovetail onto that point?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So here's another thing that I think of when I hear this. What about very old cars, like classic cars that just simply don't have an electronic system at all?
You know, sure, like, the carburetor.
As you said, the carburetor models.
They want to maintain their originality. You know,
what I'm getting at.
Yeah, they don't want to, you know, update that. I mean, of course you can update to fuel injected systems on cars like that if you want to. It's very expensive.
Sure, but also that's totally defeating the purpose of having a well-maintained classic car.
Exactly. That's right. I mean, you're upgrading to something that you necessarily don't want to upgrade to.
So you can either ruin it, you can either butcher your vintage Phantom, or just never drive it.
Your vintage Phantom. Wow. Nice.
I don't know. I mean, go big, right?
Yeah, might as well. Phantom Corsair or something. I mean, if people are going to drive, you know, fast, that's fine, but, you know, they should be driving the speed limit anyways. That's the law. So there's a posted limit on every road except for, you know, portions of the Autobahn and, you know, some places out west and very few places where there's unlimited speed.
Mm-hmm.
I think if people were just to adhere to the law, things would work themselves out. But that's not going to happen because they do make cars that exceed the speed limit. They do, you know, people have the freedom to push that gas pedal down just a little bit further if they want to and go for the adrenaline rush or whatever they're doing. But, you know, it's endangering other people on the road, of course.
Well, another part of this is that, yes, that's all well and good. But nobody ever made billions of dollars or saved billions of lives by underestimating humans' ability, you know, to cheat on laws.
Sure, and it's always going to happen.
That's a convoluted way for me to phrase it, but I think I got the gist there. With all these points, some people are probably wondering what a speed limiter does, how does it work, why won't it work on carbureted cars?
Mm-hmm.
So, Scott, just at the basic, most basic, one or two sentence level, what the heck is a speed limiter?
All right. It's just it's a device. It's an electronic device, really. Not even a device. It's just a program, really, that's put into your car's computer, your ECU or, you know, something similar to that, another control module, that really limits the engine's power at a certain point. I mean, sensors detect speed. The sensors then communicate with the engine's computer. There's like a predetermined top speed. And once that speed is reached, then the computer restricts airflow, fuel flow, you know, spark can even be restricted at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So the top speed is just that. I mean, it's limited to whatever the manufacturer sets as top speed.
And often this is a result of policy that the government or the local, you know, the authority in that country will decide. So, mm-hmm. for instance, or institute rather, since we're talking policy. So, for example, some people may not know that depending on the age of the car that you own and depending on where you live, you may well already have a speed limiter in your car.
You know, there's a very good chance you do. I mean, how many times have you heard even us talk about, you know, sports cars where it's like the new Corvette, it's got, and I'm not going to say the newest one, but I don't know what the top speed is in that one, but let's say the new Ford Mustang.
Okay.
And, you know, at the very end, they're like, you know, at the end of the review or whatever, it's usually in print when you see this, but it's electronically limited to 155 miles per hour. At this many revolutions per minute. And you'll see that in just about every car, and there's a lot of good reasons that manufacturers put that in there. First, you know, you mentioned that, you know, there are laws or restrictions on stuff like this.
Right.
The four reasons I'd say that manufacturers like to do this is maybe one is safety, because there's vehicle stability to think about. You know, you can't have a smart car that will go 170. Because, you know, do they try to make a turn, even a gentle turn at that speed, there's a good chance it's going to roll over.
Right. They're not built to perform at that speed.
Yeah, I mean, the manufacturer knows the limits. I mean, you know, let's say you have a Honda Civic and you want it to go 190, but it's limited to 122 or whatever the speed limit is.
Is that a little close to home?
maybe. Yeah, maybe. But, you know, you just have to, it comes down to, you know, what the manufacturers know that the vehicle is capable of controlling on the road. You know, if it's not capable of driving and turning at a certain speed, if it doesn't have the grip to do something like that, they're not going to allow it to go, you know, close to 200 miles an hour. Not that it could necessarily. That we've had podcasts about that, what it really takes to get to those maximum speeds. And it's a lot more than just saying, I want to go that fast.
Yeah, it's a lot more than just pushing the pedal.
A lot more than that. So, you know, there is a top end on all these cars, but most of them are electronically limited. Number two is probably to protect the engine, I'd say.
Yeah.
You know, the maximum speeds are set for maximum engine life, and that's pretty much it. I mean, they don't want to wear out parts too quickly, because if you push that thing all the time, it's going to burn up. There's going to be some problem internally. There may be some failures inside. You know, just can't keep up with that type of speed, that kind of wear and tear.
Right. One good way to relate this, or through anecdote or example, is to note the engine replacements for race cars.
Oh, yes. That's a good point, Ben.
So it would be pretty much treating your car like a race car all the time.
Most of those run without limits, and we've talked about, let's say the Group B cars.
Sure.
Remember the Ford RS200, I think it was, with the 10-hour engine life?
You did say that correctly. That is a 10-hour engine life.
And let's say the top fuel dragsters. I mean, these are extreme versions.
Sure.
Now, the top fuel dragsters, they make like one pass and then they rebuild the engine in the pits. So that's a quarter mile plus a few minutes of idling and a burnout. And, you know, that's about it. And it's done.
So the same effect to a lesser degree would apply to a streetcar. I almost said civilian car.
Oh, close, because you're thinking of our Hummer.
Right.
Episode,
yeah,
right?
It would apply to a streetcar that had its engine constantly under this enormous stress.
Yeah, good point. I mean, really, it's just a matter of preserving your engine for as long as possible and, you know, within reason. I mean, they know that you're going to push it a little bit, but, you know, again, just maximum speeds are set for maximum engine life. That's a good way to think of it.
Yeah, and a couple other reasons too, right?
Yeah, I got two more. That's big one, tires. Not many people think about this, but the tires that your vehicle are equipped with, honestly, I mean, this is why they have the tire ratings. And there's, you know, like, look at the side of your tire. You're going to find an S, T, Y, you know, whatever the rating is on your tire. S tires are capable of, they should be kept under 112 miles per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, these are tires that, like, you know, minivans have, family sedans, you know, the four-door cars that you would see all over the place. Most of those, if you travel at 112 miles per hour or above that for a certain amount of time, they're just going to shred. And the T tires, I think it's just a little bit higher at 118 miles per hour. Y tires, that goes up to like 186 miles per hour. That's what you'll find on performance cars. I think there are other ratings as well.
Yeah.
But that gives you an idea that, you know, you can't sustain speeds higher than these that I just mentioned, for any kind of length of time without them just absolutely falling apart. Now, do you remember, this goes way back, but do you remember the Bugatti Veyron that was doing the top speed test on Top Gear?
Oh, yeah.
Now, that long, long straight that he was on, and he was kind of spouting out all these facts about the cars and, you know, the car as he was trying to attain that, I think it was 257 miles per hour.
Yep.
When he got up to like around 210 or something like that, he was saying, I can only go this speed at this amount of time because the tires will shred.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a time limit. Like, you couldn't try to push it for much longer than what he did because the tires were going to go away on this thing. And those tires are expensive. I don't remember what they were, but they were really, really expensive. And as is the case with all these tires, you know, as you step up in the ratings, they get more and more expensive for the performance. And a lot of people don't think about that. You know, you're going to drive your minivan really, really fast. That's fine. But you can only do it for so long before your tires go away.
And now we're getting to the final reason.
Yeah, that's right. Finally. And I'm not going to say much about this, but fuel savings, pollution, you know, concerns, things like that. I mean, the faster you go, the more fuel that's consumed. There's more pollution created.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people that are really concerned about that. I mean, I don't think anybody with a performance car is necessarily concerned about that. Not anybody. I mean, there's a few here and there.
Well,
but
regulatory bodies are concerned about it.
Of course. And there's a lot of people that are concerned about that.
Sure, yeah.
And so, you know, there's this kind of, this headbutting that goes on between them. Like, you know, why make a car that goes this fast? It's just bad for the environment. And the people that, you know, like the fast cars say, well, I don't care about that. I'm just one person in one car. What's it going to harm?
That's a great point. Let's go back to the Veyron Supersport, right?
Mm-hmm.
Technically, mechanically speaking, this bad boy is able to hit about 268 mph or a little over 431 kilometers.
That's the Supersport model.
That's the Supersport. Yeah, I said
that's okay. No,
I thought
no, no.
I said Supersport.
Yeah, I think you did. I just want to point that out because that's not the one we saw tested.
That is true. That is true. So let's say you're the kind of person who can and will buy a Bugatti Veyron, and you say, you know what? I'm not going to go 8.5 yards. I'm going to get the Super Sport, go the whole nine, because reaching that 268 number is huge to me. And then you find out that your car has been electronically limited to 257 miles per hour. Now that's, you know, at that height, that doesn't seem like too much of a difference, you know? It's like just around 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, and where the heck are you going to do that anyways?
But if you pay that much for anything, then I think, and maybe it's just because I'm cartoonishly cheap, I think that you should be able to have the full performance potential at your fingertips.
So just driving around town, you'd like to know that if you wanted to,
well, yeah,
you could find that that long stretch of road or possibly go to the salt flats. And bump it all the way up to 268.
Look, man, if stuff gets real, I want to be able to scoot.
I don't think that'd be a problem in that kind of car.
Well, you know, again, it depends on the tires.
You would be easily spotted, however, in a crowd.
That is true. But the point we're making here is that these speed limiters do exist for a reason, and they are surprisingly common mm-hmm. in cars. Not just in the United States, not just with U.S. manufacturers, but now maybe we should talk about how to break those speed limiters.
Yeah, you know what? There's a way to turn speed limiters off, and we'll tell you about a couple of those in just a moment. But you know what? We need to break for an ad.
And we're back. Scott? We have done our due diligence. We have A, talked about why speed limiters are a good thing.
Yes.
And now we're B, going to go ahead and tell people that from here on out, whatever we say is for information purposes only.
That's right. You're on your own from this point forward, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we were talking about maybe before the break, we were mentioning that maybe you could turn a speed limiter off, right?
What?
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? You will be able to find information for your specific vehicle online. There's a good chance that this could happen. It's not every case. You know, you're not going to be able to, search every single vehicle and find a way to do this, nor are you going to be able to do it legally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible. Should you do it? We'll find out. There's a couple of examples that are given in our article. We have an article on HowStuffWorks.com that's called, How Speed Limiters Work, I think, right?
Yes, by our own Patrick George. Now, Scott, is this one of the articles you edited?
Yeah, it is. Long time ago. This one's been around for a while, so I know there's more modern examples out there. So these may be a step back, but you know what? They're still there, and it gives you a good idea of what's available.
Okay.
So this article has three examples here, and I'm not going to tell you, you know, specifically how to do this, but I'm going to tell you that, let's say one example, we disable the car speed limiter. First is a car that just does it automatically, which is remarkable to me.
Oh, yeah, the Nissan GT-R, right?
Yeah, this is amazing to me. I really can't believe this. I mean, it automatically raises its own top speed when the GPS system detects that you brought it to a racetrack. So if you're at a known location for a racetrack, let's say you're at Laguna Seca or wherever you happen to be, you know, mid-Ohio, they're going to know that you're participating in some kind of track day. And up the top speed on this thing, which is already really high. I don't know what it's limited to at this point, but so the Nissan GT-R automatically raises its own top speed. You don't have to do any kind of speed limiter disabling or tampering in this case.
Yep, it will help you out. It's on your side.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and there's other things, right? Like the Ford Mustang has a programmable top speed, and that's really more for parents with teenage drivers.
Sure. Someone who's just learning how to drive, but taking the Mustang out for the weekend night, you know, maybe on a Friday night or something.
Lucky kid.
Yeah. The parents say, I don't think we're going to have you going top speed down, you know, Georgia 400 or whatever the road happens to be.
Sure.
We would like you to, maybe at maximum be able to get up to 70, 75, whatever it is, you know, to be safe in traffic. Sure. Of course. But the programmable top speed thing isn't really anything new either because a lot of, I don't know if I want to say like fleet vehicles or if I want to say manufacturing vehicles, mm-hmm. you know, heavy vehicles. A lot of those will be programmable by the owner to say, I don't want my fleet of trucks to be able to go over 55 miles per hour because we have, you know, heavy box vans that have a lot of, you know, materials in them.
Yeah.
That, and I want to keep, you know, our reputation in sight here and say that, you know, we don't want our guys speeding all over town and, you know, kind of acting like jackasses.
And there are some liability issues.
Exactly. Yeah. Liability issues as well. So, you know, there's speed limiters on heavy vehicles like that. And I've driven, moving vans before that have been limited to, you know, I think it was 60 miles per hour. So even it's kind of strange, but you know, you're driving through the mountains. I was driving here to move
yeah.
here and driving from Michigan to here and driving through the mountains. You know, you can't get the thing to go faster than the 60 miles per hour. It's kind of a pain, but you know what? It kept me from ever going a little bit too fast on a long straight stretch, you know, when I didn't really want to go over 60.
Mm-hmm.
So even going downhill, you know, I wasn't able to go over 60 miles per hour. I think in a way it helps out. You know, it was, again, frustrating at times, but it does, mm-hmm. it does work.
So then let's also talk about some of the older examples, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Nissan 240SX.
Yeah, this is kind of cool. Now, if you disconnect, there's two sensors, I guess, that go to the transmission that will, I guess, it fools the engine's computer into thinking that the engine RPMs, it just has no idea what they are at that point. So the fourth and fifth gears are the limiter, the speed limiter, just never, ever accepts that it's going that fast. So it's like a complete bypass on the thing. So older cars like this 240SX, something like that is what you're going to have to do in order to bypass or disable your speed sensors. Now, I know that in Europe, there's also cases where, you know, BMW and Mercedes, I think it is, will unhook your speed limiter. Mm-hmm. And because if you have the potential to be driving on the Autobahn, and also, you know, I just seem to think that for whatever reason, they seem to be more in tune with their drivers. They say that, you know,
performance culture.
Exactly. I think that they say, you know, like these people really know what they want and they know how to handle it and then they'll be okay. I'm going to unhook. You know, if the customer requests, I'd like to unhook the speed limiter on this BMW that I just bought, my M-Power BMW. Could you do that? And they say, yeah, we'll do it for, you know, whatever fee it is. I think it's a fee. I would mm-hmm. think it'd have to be. They'll do that, you know, willingly. The factory will. I'm sure there's got to be some kind of disclaimer, some kind of clause that they have to sign that says, you know, we don't hold you responsible for anything.
Some way to make it legal-ish?
Yeah, I would think so. And I would bet that, you know, that covers a lot of powertrain parts as well because, you know, you could damage engine, transmission, you know, whatever it happens to be, axles, whatever. There's a lot of reasons that you could do it. A lot of ways that you can do it. Should you do it? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, there's the example of the race car switch off with the GPS.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an excellent example. You know, in other countries, of course, Japan has a limit on the vast majority mm-hmm. of, I think, domestic cars.
Yeah, and you know what? I think that those limits kind of match with the tire ratings that I mentioned before?
Yes.
I think the limit is 112 and 118 mm-hmm. respectively, and that's what S and T rated tires are.
But, of course, there you can use a model or a program that takes that off when you go to the racetrack.
Fair enough. Okay.
Which I do think is fair enough. I do have... how do you feel about this podcast
well,
so far?
Well, let me tell you, there's so many angles on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, it's an overreaching thing that, you know, that if the EU is proposing this thing where they're going to limit every vehicle, that's definitely not good. I'm not for additional legislation on anything like that. I don't enjoy something, you know, someone putting limits on me
mm-hmm.
in this. This is driving's a freedom that I think if you don't have the responsibility, if you're not able to show that self-control, that level of self-control mm-hmm. that you need to be able to maintain the speed limit or close to it, maybe you shouldn't be driving. I mean, that's it really comes down to responsibility and just being a grown-up when you're on the road, really.
I see.
And all these other things, I mean, there's so many different ways around, you know, the stuff that's going to happen anyway. So let's say they do put the limiters in place and people are going to cheat the system. What good does that really get you then? Because the people that are the speeders, those are going to be the ones that want to you know, cut the limiters. They're going to want to bypass the speed limiters. So it seems like it would just be counteractive in that, you know, you would be making people that adhere to the law that probably really don't really speed in many situations, you know, maybe a little bit here and there, making them pay for these upgrades to their cars, you know, these mm-hmm. systems, these satellite systems or camera systems or whatever, what have you. Ben, I'm almost lost with this. There's so many angles on this thing. We've talked about a few of them here. There's so many more. This seems like it could be a debate that could go on all day.
Yeah. Now I think we've done an okay job of introducing those different perspectives. We should also point out, you know, what it called to mind when you mentioned that, Scott, is it gave me some recollections of the debate regarding gun control. Mm-hmm. The idea that if someone completely outlaws owning any type of gun, then the people who own them are going to be criminals. If we completely outlaw going over a certain mile per hour, the only people who are speeding. You know, I see the point about personal responsibility.
Yeah, and I know that when we get out of here, when we turn off the lights, I'm going to have 10 other thoughts about this thing, you know, that I'm going to want to share. But, I think that we've got most of it covered. I know that there's people out there that have their own certain perspective that, you know, they're probably yelling, screaming at their iPod or whatever they're listening to us on and saying, why aren't you talking about this?
Well, you know, this would work pretty well in very, very dense cities, where, you know, in a city like London, where you wouldn't usually have a chance to even reach 70 anyway.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah, you'd be maybe lucky to reach, what, 30?
Yeah, in London. Who knows? So I can see where it would have some – I can see where it would have some advantages. Right now, the idea of that kind of sweeping legislation, the problem is that one-size-fits-all top-down legislation often doesn't work the way that it is intended to. The theory and the practice, there's a world between those two. And I have some good news for you, man.
What's the good news?
The good news, I'm glad you asked, is that there was an update on this report of the EU proposal, which I discovered shortly before we came in. And I'll just read from part of this. I'm not going to do a British accent.
Oh, very good.
Reports in the press over the last day or two have suggested that the European Union intends to bring forward formal proposals this autumn to introduce automatic speed controls known as Intelligent Speed Adaptation, or ISA, into cars. This is quite simply not true, and the Commission has made this very clear to the journalists concerned prior to publication. So the Telegraph and the Daily Mail are in a little bit of hot water.
Oh, Ben, what have we been talking about for the last half hour?
Well, here's the thing. This was their thesis, but here's the objection, which is a little sticky to me, okay?
Okay, sure.
They say the Mail on Sunday, for example, uses a quotation from a commission spokesperson, but chooses to leave out the first and most important sentence given to the paper's reporter, which was this. The commission has not tabled and does not have in the pipeline even a non-binding recommendation, let alone anything more. So what's interesting about the way that is phrased is that they basically said, wait, we're not definitely doing anything. But proposing something is still not definitely doing anything.
The idea is out there, right? I mean, the idea is somewhere out there, but there's no action on it right now, right?
So yeah, they've floated the idea.
Okay. That's a little less scary.
People reacted so vehemently and so violently that I would like to think that legislators would reconsider some of the plans, or at least the sweeping nature of it.
You know, if this were to come up around election time, I would like to see who would back this type of thing. I don't think anybody would.
Oh, buddy.
No, definitely not. So, so we've been talking about this for this idea that the EU is going to limit speeds, but it's really not going to happen. It's just someone's idea. Nothing's really happened on it. No concrete action has been taken, right?
Yeah, and it got smacked down in the court of public opinion.
But everything else that we've been talking about, speed limiters and, you know, the ideas that we're talking about, because, you know, we mentioned early on, you know, if the speed limit's 55, why do they make cars that go 155?
Great question.
So, you know, there's all these questions out there that people have about speeds and why they're limited. And, you know, hopefully we got some of that message out there that, you know, it's, you know, protect the engine. It's the tires. It's mm-hmm. safety. It's, you know, it's, I guess for the good of everybody on the road, really, you know, that you
yeah.
can't drive 200 miles per hour in your Honda Civic. But, you know, it seems like there's a lot of reasons to limit the speeds on vehicles that are good reasons, you know, the mechanical reasons and, of course, safety. But,
sure.
the idea of another entity somewhere out there saying, you're not going to use this the way that you want to, you're going to use it the way we want to, mm-hmm. and only within these limits. That to a lot of people is scary, and I agree. I mean, I think that, if this is real, if this ever crops up as something that's really going to happen, this ISA thing, I think they're not going to have many people backing them.
Now, I wouldn't be surprised if we want to go hypothetical here, Scott. I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of thing happened in an autonomous car network. That seems like it's part and parcel.
It seems like it would have to happen in that case, right? I mean, because the driver has no control over it. It's just it's whatever's set for you.
So maybe this is part of the evolution that toward that Orwellian interstate.
So this is a creeping way to get that to happen.
Yeah, hey man, it's part of a chess game possibly. I know I sound conspiratorial.
Well, okay. For you, what do you think? Do you think that this is ever going to happen in any kind of little bit of this, or do you think, like what you just said, that this is maybe one little baby step towards autonomous cars?
I think that it would have to happen were it autonomous cars. I think that that's the only way it really could happen, because if you just look at the cost of implementation to get every single driver, you know, anywhere, not even in a country like the UK, not even in a place like the United States, even a much smaller country, the cost per driver would be enormous. Someone would have to pay for it. And, full disclosure, if I was the guy who owned a company that makes car-mounted cameras that can read traffic signs, I would be all about this, because I would be able to send my kids to Harvard for, generations.
Of course, yeah. Several generations would never have to work beyond you, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But that's the only way I see it.
Now, for me, obviously not a huge fan of autonomous cars or anything like that. I hope that this never, ever comes to light. I hope that that this stays exactly where it is, someone's dark idea. that's a bad way to put it.
Yeah, you make it sound like a dark art.
Well, yeah, I know. But, to me, it comes down to driver responsibility. And mm-hmm. if you're a grown-up behind the wheel, as everybody should be at that point when they're driving.
That's a good point.
If you're going to speed, and I'm not advocating it, but pick the right place, pick the right time.
Be a grown-up. And speaking of something completely different, you want to end with a little listener mail?
I would like to do that.
Now, you have already been having a conversation with this guy, but I thought it'd be neat to read this for the listeners. Ben, not me, a different Ben, writes in to say, "Hi, Scott and Ben, just listened to your podcast on Tesla. Found it very interesting. I have a question about electric cars. Why don't the designers of electric cars use an alternator to keep the battery charged, or maybe switch off and use the alternator to charge a second battery, and then switch when the first battery runs out of power? Anyway, love the podcast. Keep up the good work."
Okay, so what he's talking about there is really perpetual motion.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to have an alternator on an all-electric car, what he's talking about is using the battery to go through the alternator to charge the battery back again, and it just is this continual cycle. Well, the problem is that the extra energy that you're using to power the alternator is more than you would ever get back out of it on the other end.
So it's draining the system.
Yeah, and really in an electric car, if you think about it, the idea is that, the electric car, it's driving, the battery power is being used for the motor, the accessories, it's being used for forward motion, it's being used to power all of the gauges inside, mm-hmm. any kind of interior lighting that you have, if you're charging your iPod or whatever, all of that stuff is being powered from that one battery. If you add an alternator to the system, that's just another additional drain on the battery, and then whatever you get from the alternator to put back into the battery,
it's going to be less.
It's going to be less, and it just doesn't work out that way. I mean, and I know that people have thought of this in the past, and I'm sure that it's been tested out, to see if this really works, but it just doesn't work that way. And I mentioned, I think, that the closest thing that I can think of to what Ben was talking about was something like regenerative braking.
Right.
In that that's somewhere where energy was going to be wasted anyways via braking, and that energy is placed back into the battery. And that's helpful in a way, but it's not running all the time. It's not like, you can... remember the old generators on bikes that you could flip over? And maybe you don't, Ben. You're kind of looking at me like I'm...
I think that there's some guys who live in my neighborhood who have those.
Okay. Well, the kind that you would flip over and it would kind of like, is a mechanical thing, and it would roll on the bike tire in order to generate the power for the light that you would use. So you'd only use it at night, but it would generate enough power to run the light. You wouldn't have to have a battery in there. that's a similar idea to regenerative braking. Similar. I mean,
right.
In a way, it's a stretch maybe, but that same idea. It's energy that you're already, that already would be wasted in the vehicle.
Right. And it's not as if regenerative braking is creating new power. It's just saving some of the expended power.
It's just a way to recoup a little bit of it. And the whole alternator thing, I mean, I understand Ben's thought process behind this that, you know, why not do that? It seems like that's what it does for our regular small car batteries. Mm. Why isn't it the same? Well, the reason is our regular, you know, the small 12-volt batteries we have now, it's not running the car all the time. It's not in charge of running everything all at once. It's really
right.
just for starting, and that's it. And then it's replenished in order to start the car again.
Right, because we have the other power source, the gasoline.
Exactly, and the alternator, which is keeping mm-hmm. things going. So,
and so, well, I wanted to put that out there for our listeners because I thought that is a great question. I'm glad you explained it on air.
I hope I was clear about that. I know it sounds clear to me when I'm thinking it, but I don't know if I've answered that as concisely as I should, but it's something like that.
That's the gist of it.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, we hope that you have enjoyed our podcast here on what speed limiters are, what they might be in the future, and how they work. Congratulations to everybody in the European Union who is terrified of having your car hobbled at 70 miles per hour. Looks like it was a false alarm. But in the meanwhile, Scott and I are going to head out here, and we're continuing our never-ending search for new topics. If you have any ideas, drop us a line on Facebook. Give us a shout or a tweet, if you will, on Twitter. Oh, and visit our new website.
Yeah, brand new website. There's lots of new information there. You can catch the podcast there, blogs, some videos that we've produced, just about everything. You can read about us if you want to. I don't know why you'd want to do that.
Which is weird because, you know, our we had, just so everybody knows, Scott, you and I wrote our bios separately. They're pretty pizza heavy.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah, yeah. We should consider doing a Car Stuff pizza show soon.
I would love that. If you have any ideas about cars or, you know what, pizza, go ahead and drop us a line.
And that is carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.